Welcome to the Ultra Running and Business Podcast, a random mix of running, people, performance, and business content. I'm Jakob, your host, and this is the Ultra Running and Business Podcast. Guys, a warm welcome back to another episode of our Ultra Running and Business Podcast. Today is all about the latter. We are diving into the world of coffee trading. The guest is business leader Dave Behrens. He's another long-standing contact of mine. I'm sure he won't think worse of me if I say that he is not a runner, but what he is a bit of a natural leader. He's currently managing partner and head of trading at Sucafina in Geneva. He was hired by Nicholas Tamari, another big character in the world of coffee trading, who I've also had the good fortune of working with over the years as well. Anyway, the conversation that I'm about to play for you with Dave nicely takes us through Dave's own career, his philosophy for people, himself and his leaders. We talk sustainability and profits, mantras and manifestos. Dave is a refreshing straight shooter on all of the above. The interview was entirely spontaneous and it was done on a couple of phones, so I do apologize for the below par sound quality on this particular episode. On a plus note, we have already agreed to do a follow-up episode next year. Now, let's switch to the boardroom of Sucafina and play the discussion I had with Dave Behrens.
Just a bit of background for everybody else, because we've known each other for a while, and there are a few things I'd like to cover with you.
Sure.
It's no secret I was trying to get you out of Noble for years and failed miserably in doing so. But it didn't stop us meeting every time I was in Stanford. And there was one particular meeting which springs to mind, which was when we had an opportunity to go and grab a cup of coffee at one of your favorite specialty coffee places. Yeah. And I remember I remember when you said, "So what's your coffee?" And I remember your disappointment when I went in early and I just said, "Oh, can I have an Americano?" And you said, "Is that the best you can do?" So, but since then I made a point of meeting every time I was in Stanford anyway. And
that's true.
And whilst I never managed to tempt you away from your job at Noble, it all ended well because you ended up with another friend of mine, which is Nicola Tamari here at Sucafina.
Yeah.
In a fantastic role with a fantastic challenge. And you also represent what I think is the most romantic of all the commodities.
Okay.
So
I agree with you, actually.
I've always had a soft spot for coffee trading. I have been involved in building a couple of rather significant teams in coffee. I want to talk a bit about coffee trading.
Sure.
Because you've always had a what I feel is a really interesting nuanced view on grooming talent. Mm. But first of all, can you give us just a super quick intro of your journey to date in coffee trading before we sort of get into what you've done for others?
Yeah, sure. So after the university, I spent about 4 years in South America. And coming back from that, I had the idea I wanted to be a commodity trader. And I very mistakenly thought I wanted to be an energy trader. And I started to do interviews. And one of those interviews was with Louis Dreyfus in Connecticut. And my first interview was with Mike Gelchi, who's currently the CEO of Louis Dreyfus again. But at the time, he was the platform head for sugar. And my second interview was with the coffee team. And as much as I liked Mike, I'm a really personable guy. When I got to the coffee team, I was like, "What's that room in the corner?" And they're like, "That's the lab." And I was like, "What do you do in the lab?" And you go into the lab and it's like Willy Wonkaville, you know, but for coffee geeks. Yeah. And so, you know, you've got this guy, he's got headphones in and he's roasting coffee and setting up these little cups. And I was like, what happens here? You know, and I just immediately fell in love with coffee from that day. And I was fortunate enough, they gave me an offer. It was 2001 where commodities were at their lows. So there wasn't a lot of people who wanted to work in commodities. So I think I got in at a very low bar period of time before they started hiring really smart people. So I was very fortunate about that, but I got my foot in the door and I had 2.5-3 amazing years at Louis Dreyfus, receiving what I would call really proper education in coffee operations, research and trading. So they didn't just say, hey, start trading day one. They said, we're going to stick you on the operation desk and you're going to move bills of ladings. You're going to do invoicing. You're going to understand cost structures and all that fun stuff. And we're going to send you to Central America to work with agronomists on research. After that period of time, my boss's boss ended up going to Noble. He called me up and said, hey, come to Noble with me. It was a very hard decision because I really loved Dreyfus. I mean, the culture was great. The people were great. But he said, by the way, we're going to build a coffee team. And in 5 years, I'm retiring and it's yours. I said, all right, you can't turn that down when you're a young guy of the age of 30 at that point. So I said, okay, I'm coming. So I went with him and we built a coffee team. 5 years passed, he didn't retire. I think 7 years passed, he didn't retire, but he eventually got promoted. Yep. And when he got promoted to be the head of soft commodities, I did become the head of the coffee platform. And so I had that role for another 5 years. So in total, I was there for about 12 years. And then Sucafina came knocking and said, hey, you know, we're a family company, but we're looking to become more a corporate. Yeah. And we've recognized that we need professional management to come in and really help us run this business. Would you be interested? And it was just a really appealing opportunity to come in, not only as a head of trading, but also as a managing partner. So having an equity stake in the business.
Okay. No, very good. Let's talk a little bit about some of the anecdotes you've shared with me over the years, which have also made me just intrigued by the world of coffee trading. And I guess it's about that the tools available to you in terms of how you make decisions as a trader. And we've spoken about this because whether you traded as a hedge fund manager or you traded as a physical owner of coffee assets or whatever, the blend of information for me is a little unique, and how you gather it is a little unique. And you've so you talk about some of the trips you've had to South America, and I know that you've also occasionally taken kind of your hedge fund buddy down on a plane to, you know, show some of the should we say the realness of
the reality
exactly
of what's happening.
So it's not just numbers you're sitting there in Greenwich making decisions on. You're actually down there feeling the beans and talking to the farmers
and seeing the extra acreage that's behind the farm that you didn't know about that got planted usually.
or in Vietnam, trying to guess how many bags are hiding up in the mountains, and one day they all come down at the same time.
That's it.
I think I love all those stories. So tell me. You've clearly been, somebody took you under their wing to show you the ropes right down to farm level. And I think that's where things have started in terms of what's made you the sort of manager leader that you're passing it on.
Yeah.
Because I think these are things that are really important to you when it comes to developing somebody else that's new to the industry.
Yeah.
Is that still relevant today, that sort of that really romantic side of coffee trading that I'm referring to, or is it all satellite images and data science today?
Yeah, I mean, I think the goal is ultimately for it to become satellite imagery and data science. And that's probably the time I need to leave coffee, because it probably won't be nearly as exciting. And part of the joy of working in coffee is the romance, is being able to go to origin, is being able to spend time with farmers. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that makes a coffee trader unique, is that you have to have the capacity to have a conversation with a coffee farmer in a very humble setting.
Yeah.
And the very next day, you have to be able to have a S&D discussion with the CEO of a major roasting company. So you need to have that flexibility of the whole gamut, and you can't get there without having done the different building blocks. And so I was very fortunate early in my career. Going back to the Dreyfus days, it was 2001. Commodity prices were depressed. Coffee had just gone from 80 cents to 40 cents, which was a very low price, way below cost of production. And we were trying to figure out what's the impact on future production of Central American countries at the time. So we hired an agronomist team. We did surveys. We went and visited farms. So I really got my hands dirty and got the sense of this is how research is done.
Yeah.
And I think that today we have a bit more of a hybrid approach because data is so much readily available. So we've just now gone through frost 2 days ago, and the market's gone from 160 to 195, 35 cents. But by the time New York opened, everybody knew there had been a frost.
Yeah.
The last time there was a frost in the 90s, some people the next day still hadn't even heard that there was a frost. So the speed at which information is passing is so much more rapid. Brazilian farmers have WhatsApp groups. Yeah. So I'm getting videos, I'm getting pictures just in real time almost.
Yeah.
So I think that information flow is helpful, yeah, but it also can be noise.
Yeah.
So you have to ascertain, yeah, who do I trust and who do I not trust? So for me, yeah, the key to success is really a hybrid of do your own research, have your own teams, do your, yeah, field work. Invest in the satellite imagery and the drones and, yeah, you know, the new technologies that allow you to gain insight from a bigger macro level. But third, it's a people business.
Yeah.
Find the relationships, find the people you can trust. And it's not to say that farmers are malicious, but there's farmers who you can trust and you're going to get really good info from, and others who you might get less good info. So you really need to build your network of farmers that you can trust.
Yeah.
And I think that probably reduces the amount of time you actually need to be in the field.
Yeah. I want to pick up on something else, because I remember years ago, I mean, it's more commonplace now, but
yeah,
years ago, I remember, I mean, you were with a, you know, the commodity trader, the dollar was king, and, yeah, and we were talking, you and I were talking, whether it was with another commodity trader or even a hedge fund. I remember some of the conversations we've had over the years. Not exactly organizations that are known for their charitable stance, yeah, should we say.
Yeah.
Yet the conversations I had with you, and I know that some of the things that were important to you in terms of moving on from Noble, one of the options that you were looking at was actually something completely different. And that was around, you know, sustainability and fairness,
yeah,
and doing something good.
Yeah.
Now that has become much more commonplace now, that companies, it's not that they need to be there, it's that they desire to be there. And the people who join them I'm generalizing here, but there is more of a tendency for people to join organizations that have a stronger purpose than purely profit maximization. So clearly, you know, profit is important here, as you said.
Absolutely.
You know, hey, we're not in it for academic satisfaction. We're in it to, yeah, make money. But I suspect that coffee, in particular, you've got to really get that balance right in terms of what you do with the farmer, what you do with, yeah, with the entire supply chain, as well as running a profitable business. So I'm interested in a couple of things, and actually this week is probably quite relevant, because you're about to go to Brazil and meet farmers who, due, yeah, to frost, are not in a good place.
Correct.
And you're going there to offer your help. Now, this is not a charity, granted.
Sure.
I'm keen to understand, where is your philosophy at now, and how far has the world of commodity trading come in terms of achieving some of those objectives that were there when I was active in commodity in coffee? Yeah. I remember sustainability and fairness and particularly life for farmers and for all, you know, was a big topic.
Yeah.
Where is the ball at now for the industry, and where is the ball at now for Dave Barron's?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. And, you know, sometimes people who meet me view me in two lights. I started my career in the Peace Corps in Bolivia, doing small business development for 2 years. But on the other hand, some people know me as a derivative trader who's likely to take advantage of a situation on a spread.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's kind of the two David Barons, if you will. And I don't really think they're Jekyll and Hyde. I think they're the same person. And I think you can be really good at trading derivatives and also care about farmers. I don't think those two things are exclusive to each other. So for me, I've always viewed coffee as the perfect career option for somebody who does want to have an impact, but also wants to make money. And I'll give you a very simple example of this. We at Sucafina own assets in East Africa, washing stations. We have maybe 2,000 farmers that are around each of these washing stations. And we have a certain volume that they can bring to us at the washing station. If we can do work to help them increase their yields by 20%, guess what? They're going to make more money.
Mm.
At the same time, our asset's going to get 20% more coffee being put through it, which is going to run it more efficiently, which means ultimately we're going to make more money.
Yeah.
So there's ways where I think we're not unique in that. I think there's a lot of companies who've seen, oh, there's a way for me to profit more by doing sustainability. Then other companies have said, well, we need corporate social responsibility.
Yeah.
So they've said, you know, I'm going to stick somebody in a corner and they're going to be our sustainability head, and they're going to say all the right things to make us look good. So where the industry's gone, which is really interesting, is that those who are at the forefront of sustainability, who've really embedded sustainability into their business and are taking technology and innovation and embedding that into sustainability, are the ones who are probably addressing the needs that the roasters have today when they're facing their consumers.
Dave, we spoke earlier about there being a variety of opportunities to choose from once you decided to move on from Noble. Tell me, what was it about Sucafina that made that one stand out?
Like for me, I said, I want to go somewhere where I can have an impact. I can be there for a long time and I can build a team and the team and I can grow together and we can have success together. We can have failures together, but we're in the trenches together kind of for the long term. And, you know, definitely what you said about Nicholas is true. He was vacationing somewhere in the Caribbean.
Nice.
And said, why don't you come to a different place, but I'll meet you there. And a board member of Sucafina flew. Nicholas was there. I was there. And we holed up for 2 days and talked nothing but vision, culture.
Nice.
What we said, blank piece of paper, forget even Sucafina. What's the ideal coffee company?
Yeah.
What do they look like?
Nicholas, by the end of the day, took his super yacht over to another island and met you there.
And I had my yacht car, Y-O-T-T, that I was driving that met him there. but no, we hold up and I mapped it out for him. I said, this is my manifesto.
Nice.
I've thought a lot about this. This is what I think is the future. And he looked at it and he's like, I don't know that we can do all that today. But he's like, we'll do this and this and this and we'll do as much of it as we can. And guess what? We've ended up doing it all.
I think
there's nothing from that manifesto we haven't done. And he's 100% kept his word on supporting me to do all those things. You know, an example is I was able to be the founder of a tech startup company called Farmer Connect. And he gave me the blessing to do it. But it was part of my manifesto that I said, ag tech is something that's coming. It's going to be important for the industry and I'm going to want to be involved in it. So I don't want to just operate in the trader box. And that's just one example, but there's many examples. So I think when you find a leader or you find somebody who's going to give you that empowerment to chase your dream, it's really powerful. So when I interview people, a lot of times I say, what's your manifesto?
Yes.
What is it that you want to get done in your career?
Yeah.
And when I think about the talent, I often think of legacy. And I don't know why, but I'm an old soul. And you can ask anybody. Even when I was 25, I probably had the soul of a 50 or 60-year-old. But I'm always thinking about legacy.
Yeah.
And early in my career, I was with a former buyer for a roaster who's since passed away. But he was in his older age. And he said, you know, David, I used to be the king of the coffee industry. Everybody laughed at my jokes. Everybody invited me to dinners, everything. The day I retired, I'm telling you, not a single person ever called me again.
Wowzers.
And I thought back to that and I said, wow, you know, and he wasn't known for being the easiest of buyers. And, you know, he kind of had a legacy for being hard-handed with his suppliers. And, you know, that I don't know, it just really resonated with me. And I said, when I retire, when I'm of no longer any use to any of these kids who are out there, are they going to remember me? Are they going to want to hang out with me? Are they going to want to have dinner with me?
Laugh at your jokes.
Yeah, exactly. Probably not laugh at my jokes, but because they're pretty bad. But at least will they want to talk? Will they want to have dinner?
Yeah.
You know, and I know that my mentors that I've had, you know, at Dreyfus, again, named Jay Irwin, Ernesto, who's at Noble.
Yes.
I still love to see them.
Yeah.
You know, I make a point to see them because they were so good to me and they invested so much in me. And I recognize that my success is so indebted to them. And we're friends.
Yeah.
Because we've been in the trenches together. And so for me, that going back to that talent and that commitment and wanting to be with the guys, it's more than just professional. You know, it's life.
I get that. And I mean, there's a point just on that. You talk about the manifesto and you talk about people with a vision and a fire in the belly to change things and have an impact. And I think, again, if you come across that, it's also really important if you as a company, a hiring manager, owner, that you are ready to get out of the way.
Yes.
You know, if you get somebody on board that's brimming with ideas and proper fire in the belly about doing stuff.
Yeah.
If you're not ready to let them, let them fly,
absolutely,
then you don't go there, you know.
Correct.
Because that is that type of person is not ready to be caged. Yeah, you know, it's a,
definitely not.
It's, but having said that, you still got to try and...
You need to build structure.
Yeah, you need to get, you need to have certain limits. To harvest it in the right way. And I think, so I think Nicola's comment to you and saying, I don't think we can do this all in round one. It's probably a really nice balanced reaction to seeing something there that he really liked.
Yeah.
But also, you can also, if you've gone for all of the above, you know, you risk not being able to actually demonstrate your impact because you're spreading yourself super thin with all your dreams and visions that you weren't allowed to exercise in your previous corporate lives.
Yep.
So it's actually the right thing to do is to release you slowly.
Correct.
And say, you know, we love all this. Dave, we also got to pay the bills. Yeah. Let's not forget that
was always part of the deal. You know, that was also one of the conversation points. Yeah. He's like, you know, all right, you want equity. How do you structure it?
Yes. Yeah.
And I told him, I said, I want zero equity for showing up. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a guy who shows up for 3 years and has a guaranteed, I want it tied to my profitability because I want to be able to bet on myself.
Yeah.
But if I make you a lot of money, I want the biggest piece possible. So I'm willing to take risk on myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that willingness to bet on yourself is something I look for in traders to a different degree. Not everybody's, you know, setting up equity in shops. No. But if you're driving a business and I say, talk to me about your compensation package. And they're like, well, I have this huge fat salary and I have a guaranteed bonus of this.
And I like some skin in the game.
I'm usually like, you're not the person I want. But when I meet somebody who goes, I'm going to make you a crap load of money and I want as much of it as I can get.
Yeah.
I'm like, we can probably figure something out. Because if you come with that attitude that you're willing to bet on yourself, it means that either you're successful or if you're not successful, then your expectations aren't inflated to begin with. So Nicholas was very keen. He said, build the profitability.
Yes.
As we build the profitability, we can start doing some of these other things. And so it was really on me if I wanted to fulfill my visions of sustainability and innovation and technology and everything else that we needed the core business to really be profitable.
Yeah.
And that's always the focal point.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my heart's in a lot of the sustainability stuff, but it starts with economic sustainability of the house.
Yeah.
You know, we have to have the house be strong.
Yeah. That's awesome. Dave, I'm conscious of time. And
the market's only up 15 cents today, by the way. It's only the biggest one day move of maybe the last 10 years. But as you can tell, I'm relaxed.
Thanks for the coffee. And I wish you a good trip to Brazil.
Thank you.
I suspect that will be quite nice to get back.
It's going to be great to travel again.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's my first trip in a post-COVID world. And, you know, I'm fully vaccinated and ready to hit the road again. And, you know, there's farmers who, you know, the price is very high.
Yeah.
So what they have of production, they're going to get a great price for.
Yes.
But some of these guys, you know, a lot of their production's been decimated and they're farmers I've known for more than a decade. You know, sometimes two decades. And so they're people who invite me to their homes and have meals with their family. So, you know, there's a connection there. So I really want to show support and go down and say hi. And there might be little I can actually do for them, but, you know, actually show some camaraderie because they've been great suppliers over the years and more than that, great friends.
Yeah. And you clearly have not lost your enthusiasm and passion and love for the coffee game. Which is really nice to confirm. Not that I expected anything else, to be honest. Thanks again, Dave, for sharing some of your stories and your thoughts and philosophies on all of this. And
thank you for joining us at Genève for a cup of coffee. And you know, we appreciate you making the effort.
Absolutely. So, thanks again, man.
Thank you.
Ciao.
Cheers.
That's it for this week. This was the Auto Running and Business Podcast. We hope to see you back next week for more randoms around running, people, performance, and business content. I'm Jakob, your host, and this was the Auto Running and Business Podcast. For more information about everything that goes on here in this business, you may want to follow me on LinkedIn. For anything that goes on in my world on the trails and in ultra running, you may want to jump onto Instagram and follow the Danish Ultra Runner. Thank you again. Bye-bye.